In 1704, the town of Deerfield, Massachusetts, was a small English colonial settlement. About 300 men, women, and children lived there. 300 years ago this week, in the cold pre-dawn hours of February 29th, the town was attacked and nearly destroyed. The raid was led by French militia from Canada, then called New France, which was in constant struggle with the English for control of North America. They were joined by natives displaced by the English settlers from the homeland they'd lived on for thousands of years. Why this one conflict occurred opens a far more complex story, and it sheds a dramatic light on native, colonial, and European interactions that until recently have only been partially understood. Susanna Lee has the first of an eight-part series, The Many Voices of 1704.
Flanking the village of Old Deerfield on the north and south end, Sandy Williams and his family continue to work the land as generations before them have done.
Well, it's probably the best soil in the world. It's a Hadley loam. Most of it is, and there's some sandy loam.
Williams's father inherited this land from his grandparents, who farmed here in the early 1900s. Behind the spinning blades of the tractor, a line of deep, rich earth unfurls like a ribbon of dark velvet.
And then you can work it. I mean, you get an inch of rain and you can go in the next day and work the ground. So it's, you know, it drains well, you know, and no rocks. I mean, you can't find any rocks.
One look and you begin to see why this fertile soil has been coveted by so many. Centuries earlier, native groups had also identified this strip along the Connecticut and Deerfield rivers as prime land for growing maize, beans, squash, and tobacco. The waters were full with trout and other fish. For thousands of years, these natives, called the Pecumtuck Indians by the English, practiced a traditional subsistence agriculture that allowed them to use the land without depleting it. And this, in turn, gave them freedom to move throughout a wide territory they knew as their homeland. Historian Kevin Sweeney is author of a recent book that re-examines the events of 1704.
The image of natives as strictly nomadic is misleading in the sense that they wandered aimlessly. They did not. They tended to have villages in certain areas. They would plant corn, and then they would move particularly into upland or inland regions where they could hunt. In April, they would often take advantage of fish runs at various falls. So it was a set round, if you will.
The Deerfield and Connecticut rivers, which shaped and enriched this land, were also critical travel routes. This traditional Wabanaki paddling song might well have been heard on the river 300 years ago. It's a favorite of historian and Abenaki Indian Marge Bruchak, who paddles her canoe along the shores of the Connecticut, still dense today with corn and other crops.
So this whole region was inhabited and traveled regularly. So when you came down the Connecticut River, the Quinnetiquook of Connecticut, you'd find put-in places, you'd find stores of corn. I mean, even as we paddle now, you can look alongside the river and see plants like Joe Pye weed and jewel weed. There's even up there on the hill a little bit of Jerusalem artichoke, and an incredible array of roots and tubers that were both cultivated and gathered wild.
By the 1600s, the surrounding forest still yielded beaver, bear, and fox for a lively fur trade between the natives and the Europeans who had recently arrived. But several forces would play a critical role in what happened next. Among them, a decline in the native population brought on by European-born diseases.
What we do know is that in those moments of first contact, plagues landed. We don't know exactly how many plagues. We do know they were devastating.
In the 1630s, an epidemic believed to be smallpox swept through the Connecticut Valley.
Historian Kevin Sweeney.
There seems to be fairly good evidence about what the death toll was, which may have been in the realm of 90%.
Later, the Pecumtuck were attacked by their Iroquois and Mohawk neighbors, which left even more dead. Finally, after a land dispute in 1665, the colonial government granted the town of Dedham, just south of Boston, 8,000 acres of land anywhere in the region. As fate would have it, the Dedham surveyors chose the lands of the Pecumtuck. Though most of the natives had dispersed to join other native groups, they had planned on returning. Scholars, including Kevin Sweeney, agree the landscape still bore the clear signs of native presence.
So there would have been evidence of the clearing the natives have done, probably of their cornfields, maybe even to some extent remnants of their habitations. And so that, in that sense, yes, the native presence was visible, though the English would have looked upon it as probably divinely created vacant land. I mean, that this they would have seen, as they did in so many things, the hand of providence, that God had cleared the land for them.
In fact, the English took this as their license to move in. Marge Bruchak.
So even the original histories of Deerfield tell you the land was vacant, it was a wilderness, it was unsettled, but there were cornfields. There were clearings, there were obviously settlements, there were still wigwams. There were burials. The original burying ground at Deerfield was settled where the native people buried their dead. Bones mingled right in there.
This blind spot in the colonial mindset served the settlers' appetite for acquiring more and more land in what they perceived as wilderness. The denial of native presence would persist for generations. A 1949 film made by Deerfield Academy offers a typical view of colonial expansion as it was perceived only 50 years ago.
North of Hadley, an unbroken wilderness stretched to Montreal. This part of the valley was inhabited then only by the feeble remnant of the once proud and powerful Pecumtic tribe, which a few years before were massacred and almost completely destroyed by the marauding Mohawks. We see now one of the last of these Indian families preparing to leave their home here for the security and protection they hope to find in the towns to the south.
They likely did not, as the film depicts, fold their teepees and give a friendly wave goodbye to the English. There were land negotiations, but historians now say the natives were manipulated through dubious trade agreements that ultimately left the land in the hands of the settlers. As the displaced natives moved north, they found a French military eager to capitalize on their anger. And by 1704, several native groups became players in a war between England and France, both seeking control of North America. Kevin Sweeney.
Whenever England and France were at war, their colony of New France or Canada and the various New England colonies were at war as well.
The natives of the Pecumtuck Valley understood their new allies could give them strength in numbers, says Patrick Côté, Abenaki Indian and curator of the Abenaki Museum in Odenak, Quebec.
So they couldn't strategically retake the valley, but putting a doubt in the British colonists' minds that we can come down here and wreak havoc whenever we wish.
The violence came on February 29, 1704, when the natives and French militia used drifted snowbanks to slide over the stockade fence that protected the town. About one-third of the population was killed. 112 men, women, and children were taken captive and marched through the snow to Canada. Among them was the town's minister, John Williams, whose published memoir would sear the brutality of this attack into the minds of generations to come. To the minister's great sorrow, his young daughter Eunice chose to live out her life with her native captors, raising questions to this day about the nature of captivity and family bonds. Marge Bruchak.
One of the things that makes interpreting this story so difficult is the fact that the dominant perspective on 1704 has always been the English perspective. What are these Indians doing here? What is the experience of the captives? What is it like to be in a town that's being burned and attacked? And it's so difficult to lay out the groundwork that puts that conflict into perspective.
What's clear is that the lives of many colonists and natives would be dramatically altered forever. And the retelling of this story for centuries to come would reveal as much about the teller as the story itself. I'm Susanna Lee.